Technical difficulties. Okay, we'll call to order the meeting of the Joint Interim Task Force on Revenue Options, School Funding, and Accountability. Welcome everybody here for our last meeting of the legislative interim. And we have the only item on the agenda today being the review of the interim, or the task force will review final report. You have before you the Citizens Advisory Committee preliminary report. Now, as I recall, it's only preliminary because it doesn't include the attachments. And then, Paul, have you explain what else we have there on the public input and tell us what we've got there. And then you have also some questions to discuss, issues to discuss that Paul has prepared for us to kind of begin to give him direction for the preparation of a report of this task force itself. I thought it would probably be best to wait until after today's meeting to ask Paul to draft any kind of report for this group until we've had a chance to get back together and reflect on the testimony that we've heard around the state in our several meetings and then respond to that in this today. So today will be kind of a free flow exchange of responses to what we've heard as a task force and what we have seen in the Citizens Advisory Committee preliminary report. And with that, Paul, if you could maybe give us an overview of the materials that we have, and then we'll get underway.
Okay. Mr. Chair, as we've discussed, the task force has had a chance to have a review of the advisory council report from a number of different perspectives from the council members. So we've had an opportunity to hear kind of the same information, but with different emphasis, different perspectives, people with different expertise in the different cities that we've met in. Also, of course, time for the public input and public testimony, which you received a fair amount of, and time to digest the report itself. What I put together in terms of kind of issues is just five questions to kind of frame a discussion about where you want to go from here in terms of the final version of the task force report. I guess my own mind have thought of that report as having the advisory council report as a core, and with modifications you want to make to it or additions to that you want to make to that report, and then the kinds of things that you want to emphasize and bring forward as major suggestions, and of course any additional things you want to include. So that's kind of the way I've laid that out. Jan has put together a draft summary of public input that you've received, and that's what that two-page handout is, kind of grouped into the revenue options and school funding areas. So in terms of the issue discussion, the first one would be just kind of a general response regarding the advisory commission, the advisory committee report, and the testimony that you've heard.
Okay. Well, let's begin with that, I guess. We've had our meetings in Salem and Hillsborough and Portland and Bend and Eugene, and we received at the Hillsborough meeting subsequently to that, have taken testimony from Citizens Advisory Committee members on the draft report that they prepared. I would open the floor, I guess, to general responses from committee members to the advisory committee report, informed by the testimony that we received in the course of our work. Who's first?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hass.
They did release a statement, or at least it was compiled by Paul, and I think the gist of this should be included in sort of a preamble of maybe some of the points that they found after, for example, schools are a critical factor in Oregon's overall quality of life and economic development. You know, those kinds of things could be incorporated into a final report. Is that what you're asking? Is that what you're asking?
Well, I think before we get to our final report, this really is just more reflecting on their report.
Right.
And then we can figure out how to incorporate that in our report. But I think clearly if there are things that we see as being issues of disagreement in their report or issues that we think are Well, I guess we'll get down to points of emphasis. We'll get, that's the next question. I think right now, just the general response to their report is we received it both in print and from the testimony from the various members of the task force, including Governor Attia.
I guess
we'll get to where you're going in terms of how to incorporate that in our report.
Well, one thing I would think, Mr. Chair, in terms of thinking about this, would you want to think of this as a core for your own report to build around and modify, or to think of it as an appendix to your report? Maybe that's a way to...
As a what?
As an appendix to your report. So whether you want to build around that as the core or make it just an appendix that would be part of something that would be a different approach.
Mr. Chair, yes. I'd just say that I think that we should build around it, as my opinion. I think that the advisory council was very strong in what they did, and obviously the information that has been provided to us by the advisory council is important to be included in, and to have us build around whatever, in my opinion, our report is.
I agree. I like the, I'll say, just again, responsive to the report itself, I appreciate the general format of the report with the background first and then the and the guidance is what you've called it. We may get to something stronger than that, or we may just follow their choice of terms, but you've broken out here accountability and cost management on one side, and then you get to revenue options. And then I think the other suggestions, just again respectful of the issues that were presented by the members of the task force, certainly that ought to be included. I like the format, though, in terms of stating the background, I guess presenting a case. Why are we even looking at school funding issues? And then those points on which there is guidance addressing discreetly the accountability and cost management issues, and then the revenue options. Because I'll say, from what I hear, everything in the way of this session shaping up, that's the way it's going to be treated. We hear from the governor on down that we're going to address first budget issues, accountability, and cost management. And then if we get to revenue, it's going to be, you know, as a consequence or as a following through from, you know, from having addressed the first piece first. But this report seems to track with that structure very well.
Yeah, I, Mr. Chair, agree that we should build around it. I think what Senator Clarno said makes sense. Although we did have some unusual or different experiences when we held some of these hearings, for example, in Portland, where they're looking at more of a regional approach, possibly, and somehow that has to be included, I think.
Paul, have they addressed regional? Is that anywhere under other suggestions?
It is, Mr. Chair. There is a reference to looking at the local option and expanding local option opportunities for school finance, but it isn't. It certainly doesn't appear as a theme here, and it could be something that the task force may want to build a greater emphasis on.
Local options in the form of the property tax. Local option, Paul.
Yes, that was the way it was discussed in the advisory council meeting.
Well, let's move on. I mean, I get a sense that at least the general response to the advisory committee report is very favorable. Let's move on down to item B. I think that's kind of where we just got to. And I'm going to add a B2. B1 will be what elements of the report should be emphasized, and I guess I'll add a B2, which is the other flip side of that question, and that is what elements should either be eliminated, de-emphasized, or, you know, with which we take some exception. Okay, and we're talking here on the, is that the third page? It's under...
under revenue options.
Under revenue...
Other suggestions.
Options. Fourth page, actually. There is a recommendation, amend Measure 5 to expand potential local option for revenue. That's where we just were, and that's what moved us down.
So that's the only specific reference to any kind of a decentralization.
Any discussion on that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it has to be something that at least there's some dialogue about. I mean, I don't think it's the number one best state policy there is, but if, as Paul and I were discussing yesterday, if it's second best, and it achieves the goals that a lot of people in one region, namely Portland, want, that differs from other regions, then it's something we should address.
Well, and not just Portland, certainly, but there are other communities around the state that would, I think, jump at the chance to have to reinvigorate the local option.
Mr. Chair, Paul, what kind of, I guess what I always worry about is getting into what we were before, mm-hmm. when prior to the Measure 5 being passed, which I hate to sound like an old-timer, but I was here, and we had such broad discrepancies in have and have not districts. Mm-hmm. We still have districts in this state where the ability to create revenue from natural resources has limited not only the jobs and the income and the money to those school districts, mm-hmm. but do we not take the taking that path, do we not run into a situation where we'll have and have not school districts again?
Mm-hmm. Senator Farr, you're absolutely right. That becomes the natural discussion point. If you consider expanding those local revenue options, then that would necessitate a look at the distribution formula to determine if there are other ways to achieve equity that may be less constraining than the current distribution formula. There are states that have things like foundation level grants in which local options can be built upon that. We received some testimony on that from Steve Smith from NCSL talking about those kinds of options. But certainly any discussion of local revenue inevitably leads to that issue. Can you do it and still maintain both the legal commitment and the policy commitment
I guess I see people in districts that could pass a local option tax, then the other districts that are now disadvantaged coming to this body and saying, we want a formula where we are offsetting what these foundations have done, and in a way, all you're doing then is taking general fund dollars to give to the disadvantaged states, which this local option areas who have, you're creating a cycle here, in my opinion, that might be mm-hmm. not equitable in the long run for either area of either a metropolitan area or a depressed area. So mm-hmm. that's just a concern I have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Hess.
I guess the other side of that, Senator, is nobody wants to go back to the have and have nots, but I think what realistically is more of the we have averages, and there are some places that want an above average school system and some don't. And so where do you provide some freedom and flexibility for Portland or Deschutes County to say we're willing to tax ourselves locally to go to an above average school system because we think that makes more sense for our economy? And so you're not penalizing people who don't want to go there because they have the system that we've built for them now statewide, but you're giving the advantage to people who want to go beyond this sort of benchmark that we've set.
And if I might,
mm-hmm, sure, yeah, this is free flying.
I think you're absolutely right. The only thing is that when you say some do and some don't, some can't. So it's not that they don't want to. I mean, when we had in '89, when we had school districts that say $5,000 per student, and we had school districts that say $1,800 per student, it wasn't that those people didn't want to, because in a lot of those depressed communities, a lot of volunteers were in the schools every day to help out, but there were no jobs, so there was no ability financial-wise to raise it, even though they wanted to have their schools have more. So it's not so much as people who don't, although there's instances maybe where people could and won't, but most of the time I think the thing that I'm worried about is that some can and some can't. When you have areas where the fishing industry or the timber industry has created a lot of lost jobs and those people have the option of going hungry, being on welfare, they are not going to vote for more taxes because they don't have the jobs or the money. So I don't want any disparity created for the have and have nots on that basis. But I agree with you. There'd be some areas where maybe people just didn't want to vote more taxes. So it's kind of a difficult situation to figure out what's fair and what's equitable, because if there's areas who do definitely want to raise money to do more for their schools seems to be, it should be able to do that.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I think the senator correctly characterizes this as a very difficult and fundamental policy question. The way I would look at it is, and I think this warrants a lot of deliberation among the legislature in the next regular session, we get to start this on Monday.
Yeah.
Is it state policy that there should be a floor defined for the quality and funding of local education, particularly K-12, or is it state policy that there should be a ceiling? And I think depending how you look at it addresses whether you agree that local communities should be allowed to have a local option. If state policy is that there should be a floor, the state's role is to guarantee a basic level of education, however we collectively define that, then allowing local option is consistent with that policy. But if instead the state policy is that we should have the same standard in every single community, which I characterized as a ceiling, then I think you wouldn't support a local option. And I think that question deserves a lot of discussion and consideration of the implications of what it means for a statewide school system.
And my guess is, and I'll get to Representative Butler, that probably the most we would do out of this group anyway, recognizing that this implicates the level of state commitment to funding, it does implicate the funding formula, you know, how does that play into this? The most I think that we could do would be to recommend an examination of this. I don't think we can recommend a particular course of action, but if we see this as at least being something viable to be examined into during the session, and it sounds to me like it is. Representative Butler?
Yeah, I appreciate that comment, Mr. Chair. My concern is that there needs to be the equality of access for education statewide for the same level of educational opportunities, but I just don't want that equal access to be greater for the folks who have no dependence upon natural resources. That's my concern, is that all of a sudden what we have is we have the unequalness that Senator Clarnell was referring to creep back into the system based upon the fact that, well, we've shut you off of your forest lands and out of your rangelands. I guess you better go find a real job. And I just don't want to have us return to that kind of a scenario again.
So I'm just going to get into that. I think it's a good comments. I'm going to guess that these are all the things in the details that you would be looking at this. But for instance, I suppose that there's a threshold. Obviously, if a local option were subject to treatment as local revenue under the current formula and then redistributed, you'd never get one passed, because why would you raise your own taxes to fund everybody's schools? Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess that if a scintilla of your local option was to be reinvested in for redistribution through the state formula, you know, it wouldn't make a difference. Where is that point at which it there is some sharing of local option revenue with state formula to, you could probably even designate recipient districts. I don't know, but I mean, I'll bet that that's something you could work out in the details of something like this, so that you accomplish substantially, you raise the taxes in the local district, and substantially all those monies go to the local district, but there is also there could also be built into that a provision for some of those local option dollars to go into a statewide fund to be redistributed. I'm just guessing that that's all feasible in the details. One of the things to me apart from this issue of equity and equalization that I think is worth looking at for this, it does reinvigorate, I think, that notion of local control. If you have more dollars coming in from the local district, you're going to have a greater sense of local ownership of the schools, which I think is going to enhance that relationship of accountability between board members and their local patrons and the schools and their patrons. So that all seems to me to be good, recognizing that you've got to balance that against those equity issues. And then, you know, I think that becomes a mechanical question of how you do that without just defeating the purpose of it in the first place. But the optimistic me tells me that somewhere there in there is a balance point at which it still is feasible to support this at a local level, while at the same time not creating that sense of such gross inequity And frankly, then, the more districts that do it, the better off they are, and the better off the rest of the state is as well, because that just means more dollars somehow through that kind of redistribution formula.
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Nolan could probably recall better than I. I don't know that I have the notes that I took in the meeting, but we did discuss at one point the possibility of what it would look like with an increase of to 1.5 versus, or from 1.5 to 1.7 dollars per,
right,
the percentage wise on the upper limits, and then some sort of a redistribution,
right,
of that. So we didn't, I don't know that we ever got into any kind of a formula, but at least that was
recognized as part
the
of
task force, the task force did have that concept introduced.
And I think the chair's suggestion that what we really need to decide either today or when we finalize our recommendation is whether we recommend that it ought to be examined by the appropriate committees in the session. And I'm generally one who prefers examining things rather than closing off options this early in the game.
A question on the current local option law that we have in the books now. That all that money would stay in the district, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it actually there isn't a provision for it that goes above. But you know, the incentive is we've got a $500 cap per student. It's 10% of your school fund dollars, or it's the maximum amount you can raise between 5 and 50. So you could raise more than that, but there's no incentive to do that.
Right. Just as a follow-up on that one, if we've talked about the local option idea here in terms of changing the Constitution to allow districts to go up on the... What if we just raised that cap on the local option? Would that, in effect, be doing the same thing? Is that just took away that $500 limit, or,
No, because we would still be constrained by the Measure 5 limits. Of $5 per thousand. So that's why you've got to get to that 5 per thousand.
Mm-hmm. We have received quite a bit of testimony over the last couple of sessions on local government, local school districts, and trying to estimate and deal with the amount of room that's available. And that's turned out to be pretty complex, any more complex than we had assumed when it first passed in 99. Because it varies so much by individual property, depending on what your assessment ratio is.
Right.
So that ends up being a very difficult process to explain that to taxpayers, what the impact is on their individual tax bill.
Have any of them actually passed district follow-on?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have
Portland and Corvallis.
Corvallis.
Oh, is that many? Okay, that many. Mm-hmm.
Pendleton. Oh.
Well, and it seems to me another reason that's worth at least talking about this in this session is that, again, given the direction the governor has set, if we are not going to be revisiting any kind of fundamental tax reform in this session or funding reform for schools, this is at least a way that the state can, it seems to me, give some greater flexibility to local school districts and greater opportunity to local school districts. So we're not increasing any funding, but we're giving communities, I guess, opportunities to do that. But again, coming back to Representative Butler's comment, always with consideration for the equity, the impact of that on equity, and trying to find that point at which we can accommodate both.
And then there's the practical matter of whether
getting one passed
would pass it.
Right. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Senator George.
Bear with me a bit. Paul, this primary question to you is, my understanding, if they do run it up, the next time we have a shot at their budget, we probably bring them back into balance by giving them out that the state would have sent to them. And so you're not, did I miss something? I see somebody laughing. Mm-hmm. Did you already deal with that?
No.
What? Senator, you mean in terms of an individual district that would have a local option?
See, they did a local option. They ran it up, and someone else couldn't afford it, so they didn't. We would adjust that one that ran up the local option downward from the state funding in order to maintain our court-mandated equality.
No, that's actually the way that the local option statute works is that there's up to $500 per student or 10% of your budget, which would not count as local revenue.
But I mean, so as far as amending Measure 5 for greater amounts, though, that's my point. Because this says amend Measure 5 to expand potential local option revenue for school.
Oh, yes.
I think it's a matter of degree. Yeah. To me, it's a question of degree. It's how far you go. Clearly, I don't think that, and again, this is where we would, I don't want to get too bogged down in the details of this now, but, and legislative council would obviously help us. It's not so much equality, but equity. And I think that's a range. I don't think that's a dollar amount. And that's something else in the details of this that we would have to be informed of as we work, that we're not creating an unconstitutional inequity between these districts, but somehow we are working within a constitutional range that's still with, you know, a certain level of state support that's equal, that we are not out of balance to a constitutional degree.
Mm-hmm. I think I understand Senator Durbin's question better. Yes, to just to enact that without some modification of the distribution formula, you're absolutely right. There would be no point in doing it for the local district. So anything like that would require either to not count those dollars as local revenue towards your estate calculation,
okay,
or to modify the point in some way. So those would have to go hand in hand, and then you're back to how do you do that while maintaining equality.
I see somebody get an attorney and say, well, this is not equity, this is not fairness. You know, we can't afford it. We have no employment in our area. Mm-hmm. And we want to be brought up to that same level there.
Well, okay. Maybe before you came in, though, that's where we also were talking about, you know, again, this is all in details, but some portion of this local option money going back into a redistribution so that, you know, the more districts that would pursue this, actually you would be boosting funding statewide as well, even for districts that aren't going to get the direct benefit from their own. So the trick is to be the last district to do it, because then you get all that increased funding without ever having to raise your property taxes.
Mr.
What? That's all right, raising all boats.
Yeah. And I know we have spent a lot of time on this issue. I think it's fairly important, particularly I'm mindful of the mission that we gave ourselves when we established this task force. And one of our charges is to develop proposals for long-term stable revenue sources to support the K-12 education system. I see precious little else in the draft report from the task force that I would characterize as a proposal for long-term stable funding for K-12 education. And so I would hope we would, at a minimum, encourage an examination of this, which may be an element, not sufficient unto itself, but an element of a long-term stable funding package.
Well, and thank you. I think if you look at the fourth bullet point, revenue options. That section starts on the second page and continues on to the third page. And the fourth bullet point, broad-based public services, including K-12 education, should be funded with broad-based taxes, such as income, property, and or consumption taxes. I could see maybe some expansion there as a listing of at least the types of taxes we're talking about.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and, mm-hmm. and with due respect, we're here, we have a task force, because what we've got now hasn't succeeded in that objective. So something that supplements it, I think, gets us a little closer to it.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Coming back to the first page, the fourth bullet on that talks about the income tax revenues from the 90s, from the boom of the 90s, and that the ordinary revenue growth will pick up in the economy, the economic recovery. But revenue from capital gains and corporate profits associated with the late 90s financial bubble unlikely to return in the near future. Now, I interlineated two or three different comments that we'd made in an earlier meeting that the capital gains is probably not likely to return in the near future, and that the ordinary income revenue growth will eventually pick up. That is one of the concepts that we have studied a little bit, and that is the potential of making an income tax as opposed to a tax on capital gains. And that's a concept which is gaining as a result, and it could be revenue neutral by moving it, the current tax rates, over to strictly income as opposed to gains on capital assets, thus removing the vagaries of the capital market from our income tax markets. And I that is something I know that Paul's office has prepared for me, a revenue neutral approach, which basically and incidentally introduces from the three or four brackets which we presently have for a from 5, 7, 9 brackets. It actually introduced about 20 brackets in that process, because there are certain things that are happening of capital markets within each of a groups of brackets. And because of that, you could remove the vagaries of the capital market out of this and supplant that with a level revenue from ordinary income, an income tax revenue on income, at 10.59%, I think is what it came out to be. And then as the report indicates, and this is under the recommendations in the report, as the report then indicates, that ordinary income revenue will return, will pick up with the economic recovery. And thus you will have true recovery of the general fund from income taxes, that is taxes, income taxes on income, as opposed to the capital market.
Could I ask Representative Butler a question?
Yes.
What is the definition you're working from of income?
Income was ordinary income with the exclusion of capital gains.
Can you define ordinary income then?
Ordinary income.
To me, any income that I receive, I don't care where it comes from, is income. And so we're obviously operating on a different definition.
Well, capital gains always has an element, or normally always has an element, of appreciation of capital due to the due to the fact that you've got issues just dealing with inflation.
Right.
And the Canadians years ago recognized that that you and I don't create inflation unless we're in the printing business, printing money. And so the inflation comes largely from actions of government, and therefore there should be no tax on the capital markets, where you're just moving money around from one place to another. And so consequently there's a definition of the differences between ordinary income and capital income, that which is earned from capital markets, which are capital gains or capital losses. We do have the distinct advantage, and we're going to get some of the reports very shortly, we do have the distinct advantage of rather substantial capital losses being carried forward now, which would be of no avail to those of us who have capital losses carried forward. They're neither deductible for the state of Oregon, nor will they benefit us in the future for offsets of capital gains if you remove that capital structure from the current income tax rates, ordinary income versus the capital.
Okay. I'm still a little confused, Mr. Chair or Paul. Do we have that definition? I mean, I always figured by the time it hit my bank account, it was income. So
ordinary income is pretty well understood.
Well,
I'm trying to determine. I understand where Senator Representative Butler is going with the capital gains piece, but if there are other pieces out there that I tend to think of as revenue that are not, I'm trying to get a handle on that.
Well, Senator Dukes, there is a distinction between income, as economists define it, as it's projected in the forecast, versus adjusted gross income, which is really the tax base.
True.
For purposes of, for example, the total amount of income in Oregon for a given year actually does not include capital gains. It includes income from current production or from transfers such as Social Security. So that's how the federal government defines it and how it's defined for the national income accounts. Then the capital gains is something that's added on as part of adjusted gross income, because that's just the change in the value of an existing asset. It's not a change, it's not a return to production. So that's a distinction that's made. Then there's a distinction, always been a distinction in the tax code between earned income and unearned income, which is earned income, labor income versus capital income. So there are a number of distinctions, but the capital gains are quite different because they reflect the change in value of an asset, not some productive activity.
Are there any other things like capital gains for purposes of the discussions we may have here?
We are finding, as we kind of survey the damage of the last year in terms of our revenue situation, that components of income are changing. Now, there are things that show up as other types of income. Even things that show up as labor income now are related to the capital markets, such as stock options and that are used to compensate labor. So the difference between them is getting a little bit more gray. But for tax purposes, capital gains are something very distinct.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else in this discussion? Yes.
Mr. Chair, one item that was discussed, and I'm not sure that Senator Dukes was taking us down that road, but it's something that was discussed at length in the Task Force Advisory Council, and that was the discussion of deductions from income, including the deductions for multiple residences, the interest on your second residence, and those kinds of things. And those, incidentally, former state representative, or former State Senator Hamby presented a fairly in-depth analysis of what could be done if you were to remove certain of those additional items which are presently deductible out of the income tax returns. In effect, it would be an add back, a disconnect with the current federal tax rates that we have. And I think in a matter of two different issues, the personal exemption and the interest deduction, she was able to balance the budget. But that wasn't our charge, was balancing the budget. I mean, those two represent $1.5 billion of basically reductions from the income tax stream right now.
And that is addressed in the fifth bullet point of the as one of the recommendations, actually, revenue options under consensus guidance to look at broadening the tax base by the reduction in the use of those credits and subtractions.
That's true, Mr. Chair, and but the consensus also took it this step and said that this should be used to broaden the income tax base with lower rates rather than as a revenue source for fear of increasing the dependence on the income tax. That was the concern, I think, of the consensus.
Would the Chair accept a simple formatting suggestion?
What?
Could we number the bullet points instead, so that when we refer to them, we can not be counting on the page to them?
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry I was called away for a moment, but
you're the orderly guy.
Are we going to go down these one at a time? I know we started on the
I hadn't necessarily planned on going down one.
I'm just wondering how we're going to are we going to go over each of these areas today to decide what we will include?
We're kind of working through this list of questions that Paul had outlined, which invite us to...
Which started us on the revenue, right?
Elements should be emphasized, not exclusive. Do you have some other or others?
Oh, no. I just wondered if we were going to look at each one of these and decide if they were to be emphasized on the revenue options only or all of them, all of the part of the report.
I hadn't planned on going through these one at a time, but would that be the committee's preference, at least under the consensus guidance items, perhaps? Do you want to do that and have a brief discussion on those to see if...
And I guess what I'd like is if, and maybe Paul did this when I was out of the room, but as if we could number these as Mary suggested and then take them one at a time and expand a little bit from Paul what each one of these... I may have missed what New Hampshire's business enterprise tax was, and we'll just briefly talk about that, and then maybe make a decision whether or not we want that to be emphasized or not included, but just maybe not, or included but not emphasized.
All right. I'm happy to do that, and that way then we will get through these list of questions as we do that, just in the process of doing that. Sure. Let's begin on the second page with under school accountability and cost management being the consensus guidelines. The first addressing the crisis in PERS. Any comments or questions about that? I assume that's one that we would carry forward. Is it a matter of emphasis as well? It seems to be pretty obvious.
I would think that would be one that would be emphasized. I've heard scary numbers out of the Portland School District as to what the PERS costs will mean to their board, and it's frightening. So I think that's one that should be emphasized as necessary to address.
Yeah, I would assume that to be the case, and unless you hear otherwise, we'll consider that done. And then the next being reexamination of standards and assessment system. In response to federal legislation, we heard about this, I think it was in Portland, as I recall, where this came in. And I think, too, I would strongly recommend that we examine this very carefully. We do have the federal No Child Left Behind Act. How does that relate to Oregon's standards and assessments?
Do we need to modify our own standards and assessments since we're going to have to comply with the federal? How do they interact? I think we're going to have to know that.
I agree.
Yeah, and that may necessitate then change in our standards and assessments. But we can't make that recommendation until we've done the examination, which I think is about as much as we can ask. The next is efforts to inform the public of the state's education goals and progress toward those goals.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I think that's fine, but I think we're going to have to set the goals first.
Well, I hope this is referring to the goals that are in current law.
One of the things that, in testimony that we heard, or suggestions, I guess, from the task force, the advisory committee, was that we should have clear goals, easily understood goals, and that we didn't have those now. And I honestly, I assume that there are some goals in the statutes, but I know I am more familiar with the programs that we have set up that we believe get us where we want to go than I am with specific goals. So I think that somehow there should be some language in here that encourages us to take a look at the goals and set some very clear, easily understandable goals.
Well, and I think that probably goes in line with the last bullet point under this section, reviewing the mandates, determine essentially change to optional, and that those retain to align with the state standards and goals. I think this all entails basically a review of what the state goals are.
And Mr. Chair, the second bullet explicitly addresses that. The state goals
either reaffirmed
should be
or modified.
Sure. Or modified.
Yeah.
So I think you've already got it there. The suggestion I'd make on the third bullet is that, although the first one doesn't explicitly say that the legislature should do this, I think it is implied, and maybe we should make it explicit instead of implied. It is less clear to me who the responsible party for the third bullet is, and I think in all of them, specific recommendations need to identify a specific responsible party, whether we the recommendation is that the legislature should do it, or the Department of Education should do it, or who should do it. And maybe we should ask Paul to consider that in as you draft our report. A recommendation that more emphasis should be put on is a little hard to swallow in a group that is supposed to emphasize accountability, because no one's accountable if you don't name them.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I thoroughly agree with what Representative Nolan just said. I just would caution how carefully we might be about what else we lay on the Department of Ed unless we're going to send funding for it. And I will tell you that I think one of the things, and I supported a lot of the education that have happened, changes that have happened in the last few years, and mandates, et cetera, and without money to address those mandates. But I think we need to be look at how it's best done in a community. Locally, it's done in rural communities very easily. It's probably, in other words, maybe there's a model for a metropolitan areas in which how this is done, and maybe this Department of Education would have a role in that, where in the local areas, the working closer with the local papers and getting the word out that way about how wonderful our schools are doing. We have school sections in various papers where I live, and it's often word of the mouth. So I would hate to see us design something that mandated the Department of Education do something statewide that was bulky or burdensome and unproductive. So I think the goal's a good idea, just how you get there.
I don't disagree with you, Senator. Whoever's responsible
is what
needs to have the resources to do it, and if there are no additional resources, then they need to be forgiven from some other obligation.
So we say somebody should make it.
The chair of the task force
Senator Butler.
Take greater effort.
Mr. Chair, I read number two and three together.
Yeah, so I think they are.
Number two talks about the legislature setting or the state goals being reaffirmed or modified, and then number three talks about the voter education informing the public about those. So really, they both talk about the goals, and it says the legislature shall. So rather than somebody should ought to, then it really belongs to the legislature, it looks like.
Although on a long-term basis, I can see where you're going to have to bring in Department of Ed and the school district, too, for that matter.
If you're going to get any changes.
Yeah, you bet.
There's going to be a lot of folks too.
Legislative budget, this is the fourth bullet. Legislative budget committees, redevelop ways to more effectively use data to analyze school budgets. and trade-offs implicit in school budget decisions. Paul, do you know what that last clause is all about?
Well, the discussion, Mr. Chair, revolved around kind of comparing how the Ways and Means Committees address the state school fund issues versus other agencies. And, you know, there's a huge difference there. Agencies, and there's a lot more information, a lot more data that's used, whereas the state school fund is a large lump sum amount, and while there's some discussion of that, it doesn't have nearly the kind of discussion about what the trade-offs might be if we were to do this instead of that. What would be the what would be the implications of that? So the direction, really, this came from the superintendents, really, on our committee, thought that a better understanding on the part of the Ways and Means Committee would be helpful. The argument really that was made was that data's there, and there needs to be really, I think in terms of Representative Nolan's comment about who's responsible, that's really directed at not only legislative budget committees, but legislative budget staff to try to use that data more in analyzing the school budget, and so it can be viewed in a more comparable way than the way we do other state agencies.
Okay. Any questions or expansion on that anybody want to make? You know, as we go through here, I think I'm just kind of gathering a sense of where consensus is between now and our next meeting. I think it would be fair for individual members to approach Paul for recommendations to be included in the final report, and we can have those recommendations before us, and if it comes to it, to vote up or down on some of these specifics. So this isn't a question of speak now or forever hold your peace, but I just want to see if there are any obvious places that we want to have consensus to emphasize, or that we may want to de-emphasize or depart from. But again, members are free to work with Paul in developing their own recommendations for inclusion in the final report within the parameters of what we are working with today.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Dukes.
Just two comments. One is that there actually was a suggestion in the advisory committee that we bring in a couple of school budgets before Ways and Means. The notion being that they're far more simple and straightforward than ours are, but that to try to educate members of the legislature about the school budgeting process and how it's done and where the money goes, really. And the other one was that, and I've heard that, I think, from the task force and outside as well, is an interest in a statewide data system. We have several. There are three or four, I think, in the state right now that are being used, maybe through ESDs or however they're coming together, and that it would be much more useful for us if we simply had one. Just comments.
And Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I think Senator Dukes has a very good idea, and I just think that whether we're developing models or looking at the way districts do their budgeting or whatever we're doing, to keep in mind the Goldilocks story, kind of. There's a big bowl of porridge, a medium-sized bowl of porridge, and a small one, and let's look at all those sizes as we analyze things. Thank you.
And of course, in terms of data collection, we do have the data collection project at the Department of Education that we've cut the funding for.
Yeah, that one. That would be it.
But it's there. I mean, it's...
Should we put some money into it, then? It could. Yeah, exactly.
Align the timing of the state education budget process more closely with schools' budget processes. Meager cuts should be avoided as much as possible. Well, of course.
Mr. Chair,
and that would not have happened unless we lost $2 billion by anyone.
I would nominate that for one of the things we should emphasize in our report.
Well, now, but let's take those first, though. They're really two different things. One is aligning the timing of the state education budget, because that is something that would occur on a regular biennium basis. But how do you do that in a biennial? I mean, what were the specifics of that? I guess I don't quite understand how we get there. I understand what the purpose of it is. But unless we're going to say the legislature has to adopt the K-12 budget by March 1, I don't know how you're going to do that. And I don't know how you mandate that to the legislature. And I don't think anyone's advocating that we shift all of the state school districts to a September 1 to October, or October 1 to September 30 school year or something.
Make it against the law to have a recession.
Punishable by? A fine.
Which we can't pay.
That's right. That's why we're going to take it. No, so I'm curious, what were the specifics in the Citizens Advisory?
The specifics were, as I recall it, about the timing of when the budget deliberations on the state school fund happened.
And it's a headache. How do you fix it?
That's one of the issues. There are lots of ways you can do it, whether you mandate it that it be first, whether you do other things like that, whether you conduct in practice the timing of it.
I heard consistently
from superintendents, from school board members, from members of the task force, that it is a huge, huge issue for them. I was at a PTA meeting last night. They're already developing their 03-04 budget, and they are doing it in a huge vacuum. I don't think we can ever make it perfect, but if one of our objectives is to provide more stable long-term funding, then giving them that information as soon as we can is something that we ought to examine.
Mr. Chair, in 95 we did pass the budget, I believe it was mid-April, which isn't March 1st, but I think that's something we should strive for. It is one of the biggest, most important things we do in this process, and perhaps we would save the state a lot of money, and that we would able, once we got that done, we might even be able to have shorter sessions.
Didn't we go back and amend it at the end of the session?
We did amend it, but at least they had an idea that they knew what had come out in April. And yes, you can, I mean, there's no reason, many people can amend the budgets later, but you need to get an idea as early as possible. And I think that's a goal we ought to set on ourselves to do.
Mr. Chair, there ought to be a price with every mandate. And so as we move forward with the budget, as we start making cuts that are going to affect those schools, then we ought to be able to say, wait a minute, here's a $100,000 cut. You're no longer responsible for $100,000 for the mandates. And there is a way to do what we're talking about doing, and that is to reduce the workload and responsibility, particularly with regard to those legislative mandates that we have imposed upon them. Because if we have imposed upon them when we felt like that we were giving them sufficient resources, then we ought to be able to reduce those mandates as we take away those resources.
Well, that is it, really, essentially what we did, wasn't it? In the was it the February special session? The school improvement fund. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We took away the funding and said, now you're relieved from...
But then after that, there were no reductions in mandates.
No, not beyond that. Yeah.
Right. Well, Mr. Chair, the largest mandate we saw from the OSBA report was special education,
right,
which is
federal.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not arguing this. And again, a lot of this is in detail. I guess what I would say is between now and the time that we have our draft report in front of us, I would encourage the advocates of this to propose some specific recommendation, at least outline how that might be done. I don't want to nail anybody down because the details will always come in the session, but at least some proposal as to how that might practically be done. I certainly agree that it creates huge headaches for the local school districts.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Number six, you aren't number six yet, are you?
Yeah, I just got there.
Okay, I didn't mean to jump.
No, I was. That was exactly it.
Well, all I want to say is that I hope if we review state mandates that we use every resource in the education community to share with us what mandates they feel instead of just what we feel.
Absolutely.
The mandates they feel are the most burdensome and costly. Thank you.
Are there any other school accountability and cost management issues that members I'm thinking of today that we want to put in now, either of your own, or there are other suggestions here that you could pull forward from the last couple of pages of this? Did audits get any discussion to speak of in the Citizens Advisory Committee?
Mr. Chair, there was some discussion of audits, and I don't recall any specific proposals on it.
Performance auditing.
Mm-hmm.
there's a non-consensus recommendation on developing performance guidance.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
And there's also a non-consensus item that's not auditing, but to require that school districts use an accrual accounting process so that they're all on the consistent.
Right. How many do we have now, Paul, that are not? It was 41 earlier in the year, I think, something like that.
That's our latest number, and they will have an incentive to go on that.
Yeah, they will, yeah. Okay, anything else that somebody wants to move up to today? And again, I'm not, this is not a speak now or purple hold your peace proposition. Is there anything else that anybody wants to have brought forward for further discussion? If not, let's go to the revenue options. Sort of a statement of principle here, I guess, that the proposal story is additional revenue, any proposals, this is not a recommendation, but that any to raise revenue, but any proposals to raise additional revenue must be preceded by efforts to clearly define what the need and systems, define the need and systems ensuring accountability. Any comments about that?
Paul, Mr. Chair, do you have any more information as to what they intended here? I think it's pretty clear, but is there anything?
It's hard to argue with, but what does it mean?
Well, I think that really the general discussion was the skepticism of the public and the need to and the suspicion, the need to explain why these dollars are needed, and it wouldn't matter, you know, how wonderful your tax proposal is, if there's not a sense for the need, then it's not going to go over the public. And I think the other issue, too, Senator, is a recognition that, you know, any revenue proposal has to stand on what it's used for. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has to be basically supported by the need for those additional resources. So, I think the task force or the committee was really looking at upfront work and explaining the need before bringing out a specific revenue proposal.
Mr. Chair, it almost sounds as though it's aiming toward revenue for specific things.
Means, yeah, dedicated?
Yeah, that's it can be taken either way, and when it's not taken that way, I would be happy to go along with it. But I'm one of those folks who thinks that having a whole lot of dedicated funds frustrates the overall purpose of running state government.
Mr. Chair, I will say that the chair of the advisory committee was very adamant about against dedicated funds. He thought that created too much inflexibility.
Okay. Well, again, as a statement of principle, it's hard to argue with. Proposals should minimize negative impact on the economy and to the greatest extent possible should encourage economic growth and capital investment.
Okay.
Any objection? And evaluate according to their full economic costs, including collection and reporting costs and interaction with federal tax code, clearly. Major changes in the revenue system should maintain roughly the current distribution of the tax burden. Oregon's current system is distributed in a roughly proportional manner.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I think some people might argue with that.
I do.
They're not distributed in a proportional manner. I'm not making the case today. But
well, I guess, you know, of course, that second sentence is technically not a recommendation. It's an observation. I guess I think we can do without that second sentence entirely. Then the question is, do we support the statement that major changes should maintain roughly the current distribution of the tax burden?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I don't support that statement.
Okay.
Personally, I think that's... Every time someone says we need to look at our current tax system, they mean something different from the person who said it just before them. But for me, I have always hoped that next session we would take a look at least the income tax. And I don't believe that it is... to me, it's nearly a flat tax, and that is not the kind of progressive tax that I think it should be. And so I don't agree with the statement.
Okay. Anybody who sat on the advisory committee, Butler, what was the thinking behind this?
Mr. Chair, I think that as we discussed the overall taxation system of taxation, there was a concept that the overall revenue system that Oregon has today is somewhat progressive. And if it is meant to be, if we're going to be raising additional resources, it needs to be on something of a progressive basis, roughly equivalent to the progressive system that we have today. And I'm not talking about just the 5, 7, and 9%, but looking behind that in the form of the kinds of credits that are offered to those folks that are paying the 9%. And that are in those other tax brackets. So I think that the discussion of the roughly proportional manner that the sentence, the second sentence there of number three alludes to, basically says there is some progressivity. Don't try and create any kind of class warfare amongst the various levels of income brackets.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator George.
I would agree with that. The presentations were done from Paul relative to the kind of taxes we have. And when you looked at the whole package, you said, gee, you know, this is about the most fair system in the nation. You know, Paul had a note in there about, you know, if you raise property taxes, an elderly person in their home is going to be adversely affected. You go to a broad-based a sales tax, and who do you attack? You attack the poor first because they've got to have the food. They've got to have the services. And so I would like to have something in there about maintaining at least something that looks like a current system, which, you know, I've always been able to say this is fair. You burn the gas, you pay the tax. And so under our current system, I think it represents some progressivity, and it is minimum, I believe, on progressive taxes.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Dukes.
Then let's have Paul write it up so that it's a statement about progressivity. And I mean, if that's the intention of it, I agree with what Representative Butler was saying. I think that our current system does have and has struggled with over the years an attempt to retain some progressivity. But if what we're trying to say is anything we do with revenue this in the future should have as one of its cornerstones a progressive form of taxation, then let's say that.
Sure, can I add something?
Yeah.
I think the basis of this discussion, or certainly initially when we put it in there, was in the context of the OTIM tax incidence results, which, as you recall, shows the system roughly proportional, the income tax having a progressive element, with the property tax having a regressive element at the lower tail. Mm-hmm. And overall, you get a bowl shape to it, where you do have a progressive tail at the high end because the income tax dominates. The low end, you do have a regressive tail because mm-hmm. the property tax with seniors, with renters, and consumers. So I think the intent here was that if the legislature comes forth with a revenue package, then it should not be one that changes that dramatically.
Okay. Not be substantially more regressive on the one hand, so it protects the low end.
That was Senator George's point about consumption taxes tend to be regressive, and I think that was the intent there, was to protect against that. I think we do have another comment down here. I know that came from one of the committee members, and that was the idea that you don't, if you have a revenue package that radically changes that, then you're looking at some real different issues.
Okay, I think we're there. Are we comfortable at least in that sense?
We're all saying
don't make it worse than it is basically what is what it says.
I wouldn't mind if we use the word progressive. Yeah. I think that will help specify what we're all basically saying.
Okay. Appreciate
so we can finesse that in there.
Well, I will say that some of the council members were uncomfortable with progressive.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess
the
that's
business side that. Arguing of the
what does that
business
mean?
Consequences.
Mm-hmm. So okay. Well, we'll take a look at that, and I can work with Paul on that. Yeah. Certainly, what we're saying is don't make it more aggressive. Mm-hmm. We agree there. Okay. Mm-hmm. Broad-based public services, including K-12 education, as well as public health and safety, should be funded with broad-based taxes, such as income, property, and or consumption taxes, in lieu of what? I mean, as opposed to what? What else is there?
Okay.
We're not going to fund it with excise taxes.
Mr. Chair, I think the concern was to go too far down the path of kind of benefit taxation with charges and fees and other selective kinds of taxes on parents, for example, on school. But education is a broad service, and therefore there should be a broad tax base to fund the bulk of it.
Okay. Personal income tax base should be broadened by reductions. And we've already talked about this one. Any further discussion on this one? This gets at the credits and deductions we talked about earlier.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I would struggle with the last sentence. I think that that needs to be left to the folks who are doing it, if indeed anybody manages to do this. And for this task force to be telling them that if you're going to take this action, then you need to take this action, I think is more than I'm comfortable doing. As far as I'm concerned, we shouldn't be allowing that multiple deductions for multiple homes. And I would see that, if the powers that be in this building decide that that should be additional revenue, then so be it. If they decide that should we shift something else and it's not additional revenue, it lowers the tax rate, then so be it. I'm not sure that we're in a position to make that kind of a recommendation, but I do agree with the first sentence.
Discussion on that? I guess I see it. I think you touched on it, Paul, that I think there's a fairly broad consensus that as elastic as the income tax system is, that if in addressing this, what we don't want to do is create a higher dependence on the income tax system.
Right.
And so I think that's what that second sentence is really all about. So that what you're doing is using that as a strategy to stabilize perhaps the income tax system, but not increase our already what's agreed upon, I think, is an over-reliance on the income tax system. Is that what that's all about? Representative Butler, you were on the committee.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Stated that way, does it sound better?
I think that captures the intent of what we did discuss, and I think that I would be concerned if we just went out to broaden the overall state's income tax system and it left it in any other fashion other than the current system of progressive taxes which we have. And I believe that we need to probably come back and take a look at the tax expenditures list, but that's an issue for the regular session, folks. I think that point, at least the recommendation that you take a look through the elimination or through the examination of elimination of some of those tax expenditures. That's a very valid way to operate our income tax system, and this again is an income tax system as opposed to a capital gains movement system.
Well, Paul, does that give you some better sense of maybe some language to work on in that? Because I think that's the sense that we're emphasizing here, is that the purpose of this is not to increase reliance on the income tax as our primary source of revenue.
And Mr. Chair, I think
committee
was referring to the House bill itself, which directs them to decrease dependence on income.
Good. Okay.
So
we can tie that in maybe from the bill. Encourage the state's congressional delegation to increase federal funding for mandates to IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Act, and the No Child Left Behind initiative. You bet.
Seriously, I don't know if you were there when the task force met and that subject came up. We had the presentation from the Department of Education, and she was right here by me, and I said, this is a massive unfunded mandate.
Oh, yeah.
And she said, Senator George, this is a massive unfunded mandate.
Was it 40%? Is that what the feds on IDEA, is that what their goal was? And we're in the teens, I think, in terms of
what I'm talking about is just no child left behind. The disabilities was supposed to have been 40%.
Yeah.
We get about 12.5%.
Yeah, right.
But the no child left behind is another monster. And I mean, I think it literally needs to be, listen, we are a United States. The basic jurisdiction constitutionally is a states in control. We're telling you, if you're going to mandate this, send the cash, kind of like what the local districts are telling us. If you're going to put the mandates on us, send it.
True to form, the federal response is, if you want the cash, here's the mandate. Yeah, I mean, you know, any federal dollars. If you want any federal dollars,
we get more mandates.
Boy, no, but this goes back though to that recommendation of aligning our own goals with the federal. So at least we're trying to streamline and economize on all of this compliance with goals and assessments, so that we've got a unified system that we can deal with.
We can afford.
Yeah. Senator Clarnell.
Yeah, as we look at this number B, what elements of the report should be emphasized? I just suggest that maybe this be the first one. I like this one.
Okay.
You're thinking of every legislator in this building signing a letter.
Yeah. Okay. Now, okay, I guess responses to public testimony. Oh, I'm sorry. Options that should be added for the final task. I'm getting ahead of myself. Other suggestions. I wouldn't propose today to go through every one of these other suggestions. I think this is while we're continuing here in the agenda, and I don't want to drag on for the rest of the afternoon, but. Those of you who have looked at this, we've had this for a couple of weeks, if there's something you want to bring out from this list, and I think we did already with the local option issue, but if there are others...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, we're in possession of LC 1143, mm-hmm. which establishes the five separate equalization following the congressional districts. There's a rather substantial amount of work that's been put into 1143, and I understand it'll be introduced under its own merits.
Right.
But that concept has received rather notable acclamation. So I don't know whether we go back in and or address at any time, any place within our report the overall concept of the elimination of the formula for distribution of the state school fund to the districts based upon that re-examination of the congressional districts, because we're all different. Every congressional district is in fact different.
Maybe what we could do in one of our recommendations is a general recommendation to review, because I think we should every session. I think we do some better than others. Review the school funding formula and distribution, and then certainly LC, or without making that a recommendation of this task force, LC 1143 becomes
one of those review.
That's right.
Tools.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We want our timber back. Oh, as long as you're out there.
You got the timber, you just don't have the money.
That's true.
It burned up this summer, in case you didn't
know. No, not the state timber. Most of the state timber is okay. I know, yeah, yours is better, but mine stayed.
It'll burn soon.
We gave it up, we want it back.
We want it back.
I think that's a good comment, though, to review the distribution. And again, if we get back to local option, as we said, that's going to implicate the distribution formula. So that really is something we should take a look at once again. In fact, is it already on the revenue committee list? Yeah, it's on our list. So. But I think it'd be good to highlight it from this task force.
Thank you.
Great jobs.
Again, then take a look at this, and I'll be glad to entertain any discussion about these others if we want to move any of them up to upper tier recommendations. I think it's important that all of these still go out, though, with the report, even as an appendix, as being part of the Citizens Advisory Committee. So they certainly will be there for legislators to see if they're looking for that hidden gem in the rough to get a bill draft in if one has not been in. So they will be there. I guess next I'd like to go on down to response to public testimony, just to see if there's anything based on what you heard from public testimony that indicates that we've missed anything, that we are out of line with our emphases, things that we are looking at. To me, it seemed to be pretty consistent with what we heard from the Citizens Advisory Committee. Some of it was more passionate, some of it was more creative than others. Still like those kids from South Eugene High, the And the surfer hat, was that what that was?
Yeah,
that was pretty good. Paul?
Mr. Chair, we do have the public input draft summary that Jan compiled and wrote up for you. I guess the what I was thinking would be to put that as an appendix to your report, and then if there are things you want to pull out of that or themes you want to emphasize, we could do that as well.
And then the form of the final task report, I think task force report, what I'll ask Paul to do is begin a draft, and we will meet again, I'm hoping, before the end of this month for one final time. We want to get our recommendations in while there's time to act on any that are appropriate to act on in this session. In between now and then, again, committee members, feel free to contact Paul to shoehorn in any particular issues that you want to have raised specifically for consideration by the committee that we may not address today. And then, Paul, what I would suggest is that maybe you and I can look together and prepare a draft that incorporates the conversation we've had today plus any member input in such a way that it identifies what's coming from where. And then we can begin to work on a document. Representative Hess.
Yeah, I was just wondering how, you know, just the form. I mean, some of these suggestions are pretty good ideas in terms of how do they get into legislation, and if they're not, I mean, there are some others. I know people want to introduce some of this on their own. Should we wait until the formal revenue committees start and do those as committee bills, or should some of these just naturally flow into bill drafts? How does that process go to work?
Well, it's hard to say. I don't think that this task force was directed to actually introduce any legislation, was it? We were just representing proposals. Yeah, that's right. I think it will come either from the committee. Certainly, the education committee is going to have jurisdiction over some of these recommendations as well. Mm-hmm. Members. We've got a sneak peek on what's here, so any of us could be drafting legislation based on any of these recommendations. And otherwise, then once it's out, I'm expecting that most of these major efforts will come probably through committee bills.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Yes, Senator Duke.
I was looking at the mission that we were given. It says the task force shall examine alternative tax reform proposals to develop a more stable tax system, evaluate the current property tax system. And I was wondering if we were planning on doing any of that.
Well, you know, given the time frame that we had, I guess I would say that I crossed that off our list on the day that you gave us the PowerPoint presentation, Paul, and then there was that day that we had all the groups in on their various proposals. So I think we've entertained that. I don't want to make this report an exhaustive report on the current property tax system. That's going to bog Paul down. I mean, because that's an evaluation of it. We've looked at it. We certainly have informed ourselves as to what it is. Do members feel like we need to do more in that regard?
Mr. Chair, all I can say is for the first one, not the property tax, but the first one, I think when we got started there was high expectation in the building that this task force was going to make recommendations to the next legislature and point in a direction. And I feel that all we're doing here is producing another report, which is okay. There are some good things in this report. But they did give us some indications from the advisory committee of things that could broaden it out and things that could make changes. And I think it would be a shame if we just shied away from them because any tax proposal, whether you're cutting or raising, is controversial.
Well, this goes back, thank you, to Representative Nolan's comments earlier, and that's where I added under my agenda today, under item C, other options should be added for the final task force report. I've added revenue proposals. Again, rather than today going through each of the proposals that we've heard, my recommendation would be that our report at least include a listing, the draft report, include a listing of the proposals that we heard in broad form. We can't get into the details if you're talking about a sales tax, whether it be 2%, 4%, and applicable to food but not candy, and, you know, those kinds of things. But I think an appropriate part of the report would include at least a an itemization of the revenue proposals that we heard, fleshed out with enough detail to so that if someone reads that, and again, for leadership, for members, for the committees, a jumping-off point to begin to develop greater detail proposal. And going back to what I said earlier, members of this task force that have recommendations that you want to include in the draft that we look at in the next meeting, get them to Paul. I think that's where we would start with those.
And Mr. Chair, that's all fine, but I remember serving on it. I can't recall if you served on it as well, the Revenue Options Committee or Task Force. I seem to recall that that was somewhere at the beginning of all those special sessions last year.
Mm-hmm. It was the Senate.
Was it Senate? Yeah. And I know that Mr. Warner has a report from that thing listing all of the revenue options that one could possibly come up with in the course of
We can look at those to incorporate at least.
I think the expectation was higher of this task force, and I think we're not meeting that expectation is all that I'm saying. And if we don't have the ability to meet it, then we don't have that ability.
Representative Hess.
Well, I think that we are going to have some options laid out there. The difference now is these are long-term options, and we all know there's not a whole lot there. A year ago, those revenue options, you know, were all short-term quick fixes, beer and wine tax, you know. You won't see beer and wine tax on here. These are long-term options, so naturally the list is going to be shorter.
You know, the list had sales tax on it and had just about everything you could, B&O tax, they were all on there.
Good job, Paul.
The thing you were afraid to ask.
Well, and we'll have those in front of us in the next meeting and can talk about them. We can even talk about them qualitatively if we want to in our next meeting. I think we've touched on just about everything else here, and I think I have a good sense of where we were going. We will add those revenue proposals to the next task force report, and we will see what we have in front of us. But I agree with Representative Katz, this would be long-term stuff and not borrow another $250 from the MSA or dip into the Education Stability Fund for another go-round. That's not going to be what we're...
You're wiping out all my options.
Oh, no, I'm not saying we're not going to do it. I'm just not going to pay the report of this task force.
Mr. Chair, what's your... if you don't mind me asking, maybe I stated it when I was out of the room, but your plan here as far as we'll meet once more?
I think once more, yeah. Well, perhaps twice more. We'll have the draft report in front of us, good, depending on how quickly we can come to consensus, or at least a majority on the elements of that report. May do it. It may take one more short meeting after that just to look at the final product.
And in the meantime,
I know we're a task force. We'll take care of it.
We're an interim task force.
Yes, we'll take care of it.
Oh, we are interim.
We'll take care of it.
Okay.
So we're meeting Sunday night, I suppose.
At 11 o'clock.
This first month is going to be like special session 6 anyway, so we will.
Are we still in the interim hall anyway?
We're still
in the Senate?
In the Senate, maybe in the interim.
Yeah, that's right.
You would have to bring that. So I guess what I'm saying that it's up, we each should get to Paul Warner if we have concepts or ideas, likes or dislikes or whatever.
I anticipate having this done by the end of the month.
Okay.
Come hell or high water, no matter what rules we have to break to do it, we will have a report of this task force out. Given the number of meetings that this group had and the Citizens Advisory Committee had in the time following the special session through the election months and the holidays, I think we've done a yeoman's job so far.
And I agree, it's important that we finalize a good report, not hurry through it.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, we do have a date on in our bill. That's for 4063. That is.
Well, since we passed it with the special session, why don't we know then?
It says the task force shall report its findings and recommendations to the committees of the 72nd Legislative Assembly having jurisdiction over revenue and school funding prior to February 1, 2003.
I would construe that to be a grant of authority to continue beyond.
That's right.
We will make it happen, folks.
The law says.
Okay, is there anything else today? Well, thank you for a good discussion, folks. This is not the last time we're going to talk about this, I think, as we move into the next session. But it's a good place to start and get some of these issues aired. Do be in touch with Paul. I picked up a new idea yesterday from a fellow who just stopped me on the street. It struck me as being creative, so I'll talk to you about that. But do get together with Paul for any ideas. We'll look at those and then have some further discussion on those for the final report in our next meeting. Okay, thank you, everybody. See you on Monday.